Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50, and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by our sponsors, Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. Today, we start our Celebrating the Advocate series. Today, we have an amazing advocate on with us, Lauren Holder. She is a powerhouse and has been featured in magazines, and she has spoke on government and policy and regulatory. She's done law enforcement training. I can go on and on about all this girl has done for the HD community. She is amazing, and she continues to bring awareness and education about Huntington's disease by telling her story that we'll talk about later on in the show. But let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Lauren. We are so excited to have you.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start and let's talk about how HD impacts your life.
Well, it impacts my life in many ways. First was my grandfather had Huntington's, and he passed away back in 2008. And then my dad started showing symptoms when I was around 20, right around the time that I decided to test myself. He's now 58. Well, he'll be 58 on December 18th. And he's in about mid-stages of the disease. And then I'm also gene positive. I tested when I was 20. I'm 31 now, and I'm still not symptomatic.
Yeah. And so really, HD has been in your life your whole life.
From the time I was 15.
15, okay.
I started my Huntington's journey when I was 15 years old when my grandfather was diagnosed.
Yeah. Okay, 15, wow. And so let's talk about how you started getting involved with your advocacy, and this could take hours as much as you've done, but let's talk about what started you.
With the advocacy portion?
Yes.
A lot of that had to do with my dad getting sick. And the fact that when he first was sick, he wasn't showing any of the chorea. He was mainly experiencing behavioral issues. He became very agitated and aggressive. And then he started experiencing some cognitive symptoms. He started having a hard time navigating the computer while listening to somebody talk to him, which was his job. He was in reservations. So when we started experiencing all of these things, I really jumped on board with advocacy and decided that something needed to change as far as providing a better quality of life for people who weren't even experiencing the movements yet.
Right.
You know, everybody seems to have this really hard time before they even start experiencing movements. And unfortunately, the Social Security Administration up until recently did not recognize anything but the movements of the disease.
Right. Right. Social Security and regulatory, for that fact. Like everyone, it was like it was a movement disorder. And it's amazing how
right.
many advocates I've, yeah, it's, that's all they thought. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, the HD community has been screaming. It's so much more than that, you know. So let's talk about the Parity Act. Let's talk about Social Security and how you got involved with that.
So Parity Act, I got involved, you know, it was mainly I got frustrated over over what was going on with people in the Huntington's community and the fact that people could not get it approved. I had talked with a lady in North Carolina who she had been denied, I think it was twice, and third time she had to basically report as bipolar with Huntington's disease in order to get approved. And to me, that's absolutely crazy that Huntington's disease wouldn't get her an approval with everything that it involves, but bipolar disorder would. And so after I heard these stories and I was getting phone calls in North Carolina, at the time I was the North Carolina chapter president for HDSA, and I was just getting all of these phone calls of people having problems with getting on disability, and I just decided it was time to do something. So my first thing that I did was my husband and I drove up to Washington, D.C. It's only about a 6-hour drive from where I am. And so we drove up and I said, you know, I want to share my story. I really want to talk about Huntington's to whoever I can. And that's what I did. I basically went into offices and I told my story. And when they tried to argue with me, I didn't let them. So it just kind of snowballed from there. I started going twice a year to D.C. And then I started working back in North Carolina with going to the local offices and making phone calls. And we got a group together to go and actually meet with Senator Hagan's office, and just a group of people from the support group that were either caregivers or symptomatic. And all of us just went and we shared our story and really said, like, this is why this is so important. And it made such a difference that we were able to get Senator Hagan to sign on immediately. It was much harder getting other people involved, but that seemed to be because of the amount of people that we had go in there. That seemed to be our big meeting. But I've been to Senator Burr's office multiple times. I've been to my representative, Virginia Fox's office multiple times, and to other offices in D.C. as well. I've advocated for other states because my parents lived in Florida and we have friends all over the country. And so if I can advocate for them, that's what I try to do.
Yeah. And it's just so crazy to me, you know, how ALS has, you know, that they are able to get their Social Security right away. And I'm so glad they are. But I mean, it's just mind boggling me why Huntington's is not on that list. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me that not every senator is just signing away, you know, like, yes, it makes sense. But obviously these things take time and it takes advocates with their feet on the ground. And in the long run, isn't it funny? And it'll be like a thing and it'll be like a story in the history books. And you had to fight so hard to make that story come to life.
I mean, you're talking about major advocacy. So there have been advocacy days. You're talking about a decade's worth already of advocating. And yes, we got one portion passed where Social Security Administration now is going to recognize more than just the movements. And that's taken, you know, over a decade to do. But the other portion of it that we're still working on is that 2-year waiting period between getting an approval for disability and getting Medicare. And reality is that's a huge part of it because of the amount of money that's passed on to taxpayers and how much cheaper it would be overall for everybody if we would get somebody with Huntington's the care that they need right at the beginning rather than waiting 2 years for them to get worse and then providing that care. So,
absolutely.
I mean, those cost savings really are huge, and it's one of the things that when I go in, I talk about that. And my dad is a perfect example because he had insulin-dependent diabetes, and he had to wait the 2 years. Well, in that 2 years, not only did his Huntington's get worse, but his other medical conditions got worse, and he ended up having his kidneys fail. Well, his kidneys failed. And then he has to go on dialysis, and then he finally got a kidney transplant. Well, that ended up dialysis alone costs something like $75,000 in the first few months. I think it was like in the first 6 months, that was $75,000, you know, in the first 6 months of it. And then a kidney transplant, you're talking about $500,000.
Sure, of course.
And then when you have to add in all of these other medications on top of that, because of a kidney transplant, you're talking about anti-rejection medications, and then those affect the brain, so that affects Huntington's, and it becomes a snowball. And everything is affected at that point, and the Huntington's gets worse, and people don't realize that. So it's a huge issue that this is not just about Huntington's, it's about other conditions too. Like 2 years is a long time to wait.
I remember when my husband got his Social Security approved, and the Social Security guy that worked on with us in the office, he said, "Oh, you don't have to wait the 2 years you have." And he looked down, he's like, "Wait, you do have to wait 2 years with Huntington's." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I don't know why I thought it was like ALS and you didn't have to." And I said, "No, we do." And so that those 2 years were, that's hard waiting for that, trying to figure out how are you going to get medical insurance for your loved one. We didn't qualify for any assistance or anything. So it was like, it was 2 years of trying to figure out stuff, you know, to make things work until we were able to get him on Medicare. So hopefully next generation will not have to worry about that.
I really hope not. I mean, it would be nice if we could get this portion of it passed. ALS was able to do it. They fought just like we are. And they went, they went through this whole process as well. And they got it passed. So I know that we can do it. It's just very time consuming, and it can be tedious sometimes. And sometimes you can feel kind of dejected because you don't get a yes when you're looking for support, which is really hard. But a big part of that is you just keep going through the no's and you keep pushing until they say yes.
Right. Well, let's talk about other projects you have worked on. I know you've done a lot of stuff with law enforcement. You've done a lot of other projects. A little bit about some other things.
Sure. So my biggest passion recently has been law enforcement. And part of that was because my father disappeared when he was in Florida. He disappeared for 12 hours. And when I tried to contact the police down in his area, they refused to take any information. So for me, I was like, no, this is not happening.
What was their excuse
in North Carolina
for that? What did they tell you?
They said,
what was their excuse?
They just said that they weren't going to take the information and that he was not considered a missing person. But they didn't know anything about Huntington's. So I don't know, you know, how they could make that decision. But it was very frustrating. I even had somebody in Florida who was trying to send them information too, and they wouldn't take information from the person in Florida. So it was very frustrating, and I was determined that it was not happening in North Carolina. So I kind of, I basically got in touch with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, and I spoke with them, and I said, hey, I would really love to come to one of your crisis intervention training meetings and talk to you about Huntington's disease and, you know, the mental side of it and things that you wouldn't necessarily think of, that we really need this in law enforcement education. So they set up a meeting for me to speak with their instructors first. And I went to the meeting and I showed them the law enforcement education kit and talked to them about my dad and different things. And the instructor said, oh, we want you to come to our meetings. So I got to go to all over North Carolina. I got to go to different regions and go to the crisis intervention trainings and actually do some of the training myself.
Oh, that's
really
so
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. I love, you know, I worked with NAMI in a couple different, in Florida and in California, and they're such a great group. But the interesting thing is before we went to them, they were thinking Huntington, they were like, Huntington's disease, why would we work together well? And we had to explain to them about the behaviors and the psychiatric, you know, the psychosis and this. And we were going on, and they were like, wait, what? They had no clue.
Exactly.
So then when, yeah, they just didn't know. And then when we've been able to work with them, it's been so beneficial because they are such a strong organization, and they do have a lot of resources.
Oh, they've been amazing for us. I'm so grateful that I was able to get in there and get their help because they've just been amazing. And you're right, they did not have an idea that Huntington's was so involved mentally. It put that on their radar as well to show support, at least here in North Carolina.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's very good. Well, let's talk about your book.
My book. okay, so my book is titled When Given Lemons. It is about my relationship with my grandfather and how Huntington's disease really affected my relationship with him. Because before I knew about Huntington's, I really just thought he was a mean, drunk old man. You know, he was he would punch my dad. He was he always seemed like he was drunk, but I don't ever remember seeing a drink in his hand. So I don't know, you know, why I thought that other than his movements. But once I found out about Huntington's, it changed my perspective completely. And so my book kind of goes into that and what I was able to do in the last year of his life and how I kind of handled finding out about Huntington's and, you know, going from there. I'm actually writing a second book. It's going to be based off of my dad.
Which is actually so cool when you think about it. You have one of your grandfather, your perspective, and then you, you know, when you were a little younger, and now you, as, you know, older and being an advocate with your perspective of your dad, which is so, it's really neat how they are going to go together, you know. How do we get a copy of it's When Handed Lemons, right?
When Given Lemons.
When Given Lemons.
So it's through Publish America. You can go to their website. It used to be sold on Amazon, but I don't know if it still is. But people can contact me, and I can always send copies out.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you have copies. So if you guys, how could they contact you?
Via email is the easiest way to get a hold of me. So my email is laurenholder@gmail.com. The other really good way to get a hold of me is via Facebook. Because I am a Facebook addict.
I think we all are. I think we all are in HD. It's a good place for us all to come together.
Exactly. It's a great way to stay in touch.
I will put that information, your contact information, on the show page, and that way people, because it sounds like a fantastic book. I'm actually shocked. I haven't read it yet. I need to get a copy of it for sure. I would love to read it. And definitely am excited about the next one. Well, another publication. Let's talk about your recent article in Good Housekeeping, How Genetics Test Changed My Life. I was so excited when I opened Good Housekeeping and I saw your face. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my friend Lauren. So let's talk about that article and how it came.
Yeah, I actually got that response a lot, and it was really cool getting so many messages from people saying, oh, I saw you in Good Housekeeping. Some of them not even related to the Huntington's community, which was really cool. And I was just lucky because this wonderful writer named Virginia contacted me. She had gotten my contact information from somewhere, and she was wanting to do a piece on genetic testing, and she asked if she could call me and we could talk about it. And I was like, sure, of course, I'd be happy to share my story. And we started talking, and she took the first portion of it to her editor, and they said, we want more. So we kept going with it. She talked to me further, and she took it back, and they said, we want a little bit more. So it actually, it took several months for us to get that completed because she kept coming back and saying, oh, we want a little bit more, we want a little bit more. And it turned out great. Virginia did an amazing job.
In
putting that in there.
Fantastic article.
And then Good Housekeeping has been very supportive. They actually sent me the extra copies of the magazine so I could pass them out for free at my walk last year or this past year.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great article, and I'm sure you can still find it online if you don't have the actual magazine. And that's actually a link I would like to put up too, because it is a great article. Well, let's talk about what's to come. So we know that you are in the process of writing your second book, but you also just made it public that you were just interviewed by CNN, which is unbelievably amazing for advocacy and awareness. I am so excited, Tan, about that.
This was an amazing opportunity that just popped up in the past few weeks. I got contacted because there's a doctor who met me through the Huntington's community. He lives in North Carolina, and he was doing an interview with CNN, and he said, hey, would you mind if I pass on your information? I think that you would be great for an interview with CNN. And I was like, sure, absolutely. So I got a phone call a couple weeks ago, and they were just asking me some general questions about Huntington's, and they were saying, oh, you know, we don't know a lot. Do you have any videos? And that's when I asked everybody on Facebook, like, oh, send me your videos, but I have to have your approval.
Right.
And I sent about 20-something videos to this lady at CNN so she could get an idea of what Huntington's is. And then she emailed me and she said, hey, we're going to fly down to North Carolina. Would you be willing to do an interview when we fly down? And I was like, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it just came together in the past few weeks. It was amazing. I got to talk about law enforcement and medical professionals and how really we have a lot of law enforcement and medical professionals who are unaware of what Huntington's is or how to deal with Huntington's. And so how that needs to change. And then I got to talk a lot about the mental health side of Huntington's, which is really cool.
Yeah, definitely. Very cool. Well, we cannot wait to see that. And just one more question, Lauren. When there may be someone young that Huntington's just entered their life and, you know, is going to be listening to the show, and you definitely are one of those amazing advocates that took a circumstance of so many HD advocates, but you are definitely a powerhouse that took your situation and you just made it something amazing as far as awareness and really truly dedicating a lot of your life to the HD community and serving the HD community, trying to change policy and all that. So what words would you have for someone that is just now entering into our community?
Well, first, thank you for those words. I really appreciate it. I guess what I would say would be not to give up. And it's really easy for us, even myself, I have my down days. Not every day is extremely positive. We're going to have down days, but I think the one thing that I hold on to is I'm not going to die with this disease. I'm going to live with it. And really changing that mindset of I'm dying from a disease to living with it, because we have to strive for a quality of life. We've got to fight for it. And the more we fight, the better it's going to be. So I love when people are called HD warriors. I love all of that, because to me, that's what we are. We are fighting a battle, and it's really, really easy to give up when it seems like there's no hope, but the only way we win is if we keep fighting.
Right. Right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Lauren. And thank you for all that you do for our HD community. You are amazing. I think we can wrap up the show now. You guys can tune in next week. We're going to talk to an amazing young lady that I was actually just just met in person recently at the Huntington Study Group with actually Lauren Holder, and I were there together. Her name is Havana Lowes, and she is an incredible young lady. I believe she just turned 18, right, Lauren?
Yes, she's an amazing person, amazing lady, doing wonderful things.
Yeah, she's brilliant. I mean, when I met her, she was 17 a couple months ago, and I was blown away that a 17-year-old could be this, I mean, just this passionate. And so we are actually going to talk to Havana next week, same time, same place, about all of her advocacy as we continue the second part of our series, Celebrating the Advocate. I would like to just take a second to remember December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. And I would like to thank everyone who serves our country and has served our country and continues to serve our country. Thank you for your service. And I know today is a hard day for Americans. We continue on as a great country. So I thank you, Lauren, again. And I will talk to you all soon. Everyone have a safe night.
Thanks.